Welcome back to Money Mania, where we're talking tax season and what to do with that refund. If you really want your tax refund to have a positive impact, I'm bullish on Ohio's 529 plan. I always say, invest in something you love. Well, there's nothing we love more than our kids. So invest in their future and let your tax refund help. For as little as $25, you can get started today at collegeadvantage.com.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
It is the best time of year. It's the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN. Chris Ronji and Randy Carrick with you. BT out doing Cardinal baseball this weekend. It's 3:04. Your time check brought to you by Clarkson Jewelers, an officially licensed Rolex jeweler. And if you tune in at 3:04 on Tuesday, you'll be late.
An hour late.
Yeah, because starting Tuesday, this particular program, the 101 ESPN Fast Lane, which in its initial incarnation was a 2 p.m. to 6 p.m. program, we're going to be 2 to 6 again.
Moving forward until the foreseeable
future. Actually, moving back from 3 to 2.
Well, I mean moving forward for us in time, but the time slot is moving back.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah, so it's a 2 to 6 from now on the Fast Lane from here on out.
Yeah, looking forward to that. That'll be fun. BT will be back with us on Tuesday. And by the way, we'll be at the Schnucks in Crestwood on Tuesday.
Oh, beautiful.
Oh, yeah, we're going to be drinking some of that 101 ESPN bourbon.
We can sample, Randy, but we can't really get too heavy.
Can't guzzle?
Yeah, I mean, we've got a show to do.
Might make it good.
I'll tell you what, 5:45, I'm cracking one open.
Okay.
Maybe. Wait, the boss is out the room, right?
He is listening.
Oh, is he?
Damn. Yeah.
Never mind. But it is that 101 ESPN 10-year Ezra Brooks bourbon. It's really good, and you should come to Schnucks on Monday or Tuesday and pick some up. We'll be there 2 to 6.
I did mention earlier in the week that this is one of my favorite times of the year as we go into September. The weather is obviously great. This is really the start, in my opinion, of the pennant races. When you get to September 1st, that's when it really matters and the game changes for me. Mizzou opens up their season tomorrow against Wyoming. We had college football last night. We're a week away from the NFL. So a lot of, and of course, Blues training camp. We are only 15 days away from Blues training camp.
You know, I love this too. I love there's so much going on. You have so many different options, especially when it gets to the weekend. By Saturday, There are so many different things to watch. At times, it can feel overwhelming. But if you're a diehard baseball fan this is the best month, aside from October. September is really the best month for baseball because you've got all these teams that still have hope and you're still whittling things down and somebody's going to get left out. Some things are going to get decided here in the next few weeks. It's such a fun time, and it's a great appetizer for the month of October. And I remember one time a friend of the show, Bruce Levine, we were standing in the Sox clubhouse before a game on Sunday, that first September Sunday, when all the games are happening, NFL, and it's on in the clubhouse. So you've got football on the big screen in the clubhouse and a bunch of guys are sitting around watching. And Bruce says, I hate this time of year, man.
Oh, man.
I go, why? Because he's a baseball guy.
Uh-huh.
And he says, you know, this is maybe the best month for the Major League Baseball season, aside from October, and everybody's now turning their attention to football. Because you got college football and you've got the NFL. Mm-hmm. And this is, guys, stop, don't take your attention away from what's happening on the baseball field. A lot of great games are going to happen here in the month of September. That's the one bad thing about it, because I do agree with that to an extent. A lot of great baseball is played here this month, and a lot of people don't watch it because they're looking elsewhere.
If you want to see really good pitching, or pitchers at least, this is a great weekend to see them. Tonight, the Cardinals will take on Trevor Bauer, who has been a number one quality pitcher in the past for Cleveland, has not been as good for Cincinnati since he moved to the Reds. Then tomorrow, the Cardinals will have to face Sonny Gray in the second game. Tyler Mahle will go in the first game for Cincinnati. And then on Sunday, Luis Castillo has had a really good year. So the Cardinals will have their hands full in this Labor Day weekend series against the Reds. The Reds down in the standings, but certainly a threat to anybody they play.
Well, I don't care much about schedules necessarily, especially in the month of September, unless you're playing teams that directly affect you going to the playoffs. So the Cubs, for example, got a lot of games against the Cubs coming up here next month. So those matter a whole lot more. But when you're playing a team like the Reds that's not going to the playoffs this year and they're not over 500 or even at 500 at the moment, and they still have good talent, those are the most dangerous teams to play in September. You know why? Because there are no tight booties. You know, nobody is worried about making a wrong pitch. Nobody's really worried about screwing up an at-bat or having a bases-loaded situation and failing to come through. They're playing loose. The Reds are going to play loose for the rest of the month because they've got nothing to worry about through the end of the year, while the Cardinals and Cubs and teams like the Phillies, they can't afford to make mistakes. So you're running up against some dangerous teams that have talent like Cincinnati. Cardinals can't take them lightly.
It looks like the Cardinals will have a one-game lead over the Cubs heading into tonight's game. Chicago leading Milwaukee in the bottom of the fifth at Wrigley Field, 5-0. And the Brewers have fallen on some hard times. Chicago looks like they're going to win that one. Meanwhile, Mizzou opens up their 2019 season tomorrow night in Laramie, Wyoming against the Cowboys. Tigers are out of the top 25, but they're number 26.
Mm-hmm.
We're number 26. We're number 26. And this is a Mizzou team that has a chance, if they can get off to a good start, which they haven't yet under Barry Odom, they have a chance to be a really, really good team this year.
I imagine this is going to be a really fun year. And the only thing about it that is not fun is the idea that we have right now. They may not get to go to a bowl game. That's pretty much it. But the way the team is set up, a quarterback that is special, and they just lost a guy who was a pretty darn good quarterback in Drew Lock, and they've gained another one who's got national championship game experience. This is a great time to be a Missouri football fan, even though Kelly Bryant's going to be around for just 1 year. This is an awesome time, and I really think it's going to be. Forget about the other stuff. Forget about the bowl ban. I think they're going to have a really, really nice year in Columbia.
How about Clemson last night? Trevor Lawrence only 13 of 23, one touchdown, two picks, but they put 52 on the board against Georgia Tech, in large part because they ran for 411 yards.
Mm-hmm.
We say Trevor Lawrence's team, but they can do it all.
Yeah, they can. They're going to be really tough. Are they your national championship favorite
they're
already?
They're my favorite, yep.
Yeah, they made quick work of Georgia Tech.
And we're less than a week away from the first regular season game. That'll be next Thursday night, the Packers and the Bears. And let's hope that that's a blowout for Chicago.
And that the kicker doesn't matter?
Yeah, we don't want that one to come down to a three-point game in the closing minutes, because you know what happens when the Bears are in a big game and it comes down to the closing moments and it is a three-point or less game, right?
What?
Boink. Yeah. Sorry.
You know, I thought we had moved on from that.
And no, you're never going
to
move on.
I thought we had grown up and we had moved on to the next thing. Did you see Pinheiro shank one last night?
Yeah.
But he recovered nicely, and I think he made the next
couple.
Yeah,
he'll only miss one or two a game.
That first one was brutal. Like, it didn't even hit the upright. He just missed it altogether.
It's the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN. Awesome time of year, and we hope you enjoy your Labor Day weekend.
I got a text message here, Randy, that says, "Hey, guys, don't worry about the time change. I never listen anyway." What's wrong with that text?
He must be listening now.
Mm-hmm.
He or she.
It's from Brian.
Okay.
So cool, you would have to be listening to know that you've got to send this text message. Right?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah. And you can listen either on your radio in your car or on the web at 101ESPN.com, or you can download the 101ESPN app and hear us 24/7. You can hear us all the time if you want, Brian.
That's right. So. And we have the show podcasted as well. So if you miss it, once 7 o'clock rolls around, all 4 hours are podcasted. Starting next week, a little after 6 o'clock, mm-hmm. they'll be ready.
Coming up, knowing the Cardinals are in first place, do you feel the need to apologize for some of the things you might have said? If so, you're not alone. That's next on 101 ESPN. That's our buddy Greg Amsinger of MLB Network, and they kind of do look like they had a clue. Obviously, we, and as it turns out at the end of the season, we might be correct in being bothered that they didn't go get a starting pitcher at the trade deadline. But for the people that wanted John Mozeliak fired immediately when they didn't get that pitcher, for the team to go on this run and be in first place on August 30th, I think there was a lot of people wrong about the club. What I said, Ranj, and I will stand by this, and actually it's still kind of the case, a lot of good players weren't living up to what their capabilities are. Some players have certainly lifted their game, Flaherty and Hudson among them, and Colton Wong is another guy. But there are other players on this team that still haven't, in my opinion, reached the plateaus that they're capable of.
That is true. But I think you also touched on the important idea. Two things can be correct at once. One, you love the way they're playing, and they are playing really good baseball right now, and they're doing just about everything right. And that has to be commended. And the other truth is there's still a month left to go. So I'm going to reserve judgment on this for another few weeks and see where we are at the end of September. I still am of the mindset that another starting pitcher really would help because you still have a month to go in this season. I didn't think, where I was wrong, is I didn't think they would get this hot the way they had played over the last 3 weeks. I didn't think it would go that well for them. I thought they'd have a winning record. Mm-hmm. I just didn't think they'd go winning something like 15 of 20 or 16 of 20 or whatever it is. That's great baseball. I just didn't think it was going to be to that level after getting swept by the Dodgers and how they looked in that series. I didn't see this coming, and not a whole lot of people did. So this is one of those things you really do have to kind of reserve judgment and see how the next few weeks play out, because it doesn't really look like the Cubs are going to go anywhere either, and they are right there on your heels.
Now, Greg talked about how the Cardinals got here and how weird it is.
I never thought that before opening day, the Cardinals would be in first place close to September 1st. The Cardinals would be in first place, and Dexter Fowler would be a mainstay in the leadoff spot, and Matt Carpenter might not be playing this weekend. That is the reality of this team, and it was the complete opposite. Going into the home opener, that the Cardinals would have a consistent Dexter Fowler. So it's crazy how this game plays out, but sometimes the best move a front office can make is not making one at all, and we'll see if it plays out that way for the Cardinals.
And obviously, that's the most important and salient point. We'll see if it works out for the Cardinals, because there's going to come a point, especially with those top two starters now, quote-unquote top two starters, with Flaherty and Hudson, where they are not going to be good for a couple of starts in a row. Who's going to pick them up when they have a couple of off starts in September? Because inevitably it happens. It happened to Chris Carpenter. It happened to John Tudor. It happened to Joaquin Andujar. It's happened to Adam Wainwright in September. You have a bad start or two. And inevitably, with good teams, somebody steps up and takes care of the problem for you. Do the Cardinals have the people, whether it's Michael Wacha, Adam Wainwright, whoever, to solve those problems when they arise?
It's possible, but the reality is you don't know, because it isn't a rotation that's especially strong after you get past that first couple. I think if you're looking at the Nationals rotation, you feel pretty good about somebody being able to pick up the others. That would happen. I think it would happen for the Mets rotation, but they've got other issues on their team. But with this particular rotation, beyond Jack Flaherty, I don't know who does that. Maybe Miles Michaelis. Maybe it is Wainwright. Maybe it's Wacha. But again, those are all maybes. I'll tell you this, though. I feel really confident when Jack Flaherty is on the mound. And when he has a start like he had a couple of days ago, where it's still a quality start, but it's not his best.
Mm-hmm.
That's how you know a guy is good.
Right.
When he doesn't have his best night going, and he's still giving you six innings and two runs. That's that's great. So I really don't have any problem with him. It's just everybody else, I'm not quite sure what we're going to get over the next 4 weeks.
We are confident in the bullpen, and Greg, for his observation, believes that another part that we're concerned about is actually pretty good right now.
I think the Cardinals are going to be offensively what they are right now. Even though they only scored one run the other day against the Brewers, I think this is a team that's scoring runs now. Going forward, they're scoring runs. Dexter Fowler, he's taking pitches again, on base around 350. He's in the role he's supposed to be in. Yadier Molina is out of hibernation, hitting homers, feeling good. It's different Harrison Bader than before they sent him down to the minor leagues. That's just at the bottom of the rotation. Goldschmidt, Ozuna, DeYoung, consistency 3-4-5. Whatever you get from Wong is a plus. I think this team's scoring runs now. They're going to be scoring 4 to 6 runs a night.
That'd be great to see. Greg has more confidence in Paul DeYoung being a consistent performer than I do. I do hope that Paul Goldschmidt winds up being what we think he's going to be. I actually feel pretty good, as he does, about Marcelo Ozuna. But I'd like to see, and I haven't seen today's lineup. Have you? I don't know if the Cardinals,
I can look
if
it up
they
here.
Have Wonger in the two-hole yet or not. But that'll make a difference. I think if Colton Wong can keep doing what he's really done all season long, then I think you've got a really nice top four, and if DeYoung can keep going, perhaps a top five.
Well, it's set up with those two guys at the top of the order, Fowler and Wong, in front of Goldschmidt, Ozuna, and DeYoung. That's set up about as well as they can possibly set things up, and that is what it looks like tonight. It is Fowler, Wong, Goldie, Ozuna, DeYoung, Molina. Carpenter is back in. He plays at third. Then it's Bader and Hudson who will bat ninth, and Trevor Bauer is pitching for Cincinnati. So that's it. That's about the best lineup they could put out there, with maybe putting Tommy Edmond in for Carpenter. But with Carpenter looking okay last couple of games and opportunities he's had, it's fine. I just don't think you can allow him to consistently go out there and go 0-for-4. Now, going back to what Amsinger said about this team scoring 4 to 6 runs, I think that is possible. But also, the schedule over the last 3 weeks looks a whole lot different if they're scoring 4 to 6 runs as opposed to scoring at least 6 runs on a nightly basis, which is what they were doing. I mean, they were scoring runs. You go back about 2.5 weeks, I know we talked about this already, there were only 3 times over about a 10 or 11 game period where they scored fewer than 6. I mean, it was a lot of 6, 8 runs, 10 runs, 11 runs, 12 runs. You had quite a few of those games throughout that stretch. If they're not doing that, I think the record looks a little bit different. Maybe they're not in first place right now, which means the pitching staff's going to have to remain tight. And as what, going back to what you said about the bullpen, that is the one aspect of the team, aside from the base running and defense, I'm comfortable with those. I think I know what those are. I am really comfortable with this Cardinals bullpen.
Me too.
That's the one thing I think will be perfectly fine as we go through the end of September, unless the starting rotation here in the next couple of weeks starts to hit a wall and they're asking that bullpen to work more and increasing that workload kind of gets to the end of the month and you're tiring people out. If they don't do that, that bullpen's going to be just fine. As long as they don't wear out the relievers, the bullpen will be good, I think, by the end of the year.
If you haven't heard, the Cardinals today placed Lane Thomas on the 10-day IL with a broken wrist. He was hit by pitches in back-to-back games, and so he has been placed on the IL, and Tyler O'Neill has been restored to the active roster coming off of the 10-day IL. And I would think that with the wrist fracture on August 30th, we've probably seen the last of Lane Thomas for 2019.
I would think so, and he wasn't getting a ton of opportunity anyway. My guess is the only way you see him a lot in September is if they were really far up or they were really far behind. But because they're in the middle of a playoff race, they feel comfortable with the other guys they're putting out there regularly. So you weren't going to see Thomas much anyway.
I want to get to one statistic, and that is the number of the Cardinals' record when they score 3 or more runs, because that has been, for the last couple of years, a key number, and it really is a key number for every team in baseball. But when the Cardinals score 3 or more runs, generally their winning percentage is overwhelmingly positive. And I don't have the number for you right now, but it's in the last couple of years, they've played well over 700 ball when they score 3 or more. And if they do that, it's not 4 to 6. It's 3 or more. If they can do that, then they're going to be a a team that nobody will want to face.
As long as that starting pitching holds up and gives them innings. If that stops happening, though, and I don't know if it will. It could. They could hit a wall. Young pitchers, it happens. You just have to hope it doesn't. If that does happen, then they're gonna have some issues here. I guess I'm happy with the way they've played. They put themselves in first place. They have played really good ball over the last 3 weeks. But I can't help but think about the rest of the National League and how things have played out for a lot of these teams. Look at what the Mets did leading up to the trade deadline. And remember how they didn't sell off and everybody was worrying and wondering why they didn't do it and thought they were really stupid for not doing it.
Yep.
And then they ended up winning 21 of 26 games and everybody thought, oh, we were wrong. Well, now look at them. Now they've gone and they've lost, what, 6 in a row?
That's, yeah.
They don't look very good right now. So things have flipped. And that's the concern for me in the National League and the way things have gone. That includes the Cardinals team. Is that things have flipped a lot, with the exception of the Dodgers team that has just been right there all year, Braves as well. Everybody else has been up and down. September is going to be really fascinating to see what happens.
Cardinals are 68-24 when scoring 3 or more, and when scoring less than 3, they're 5-34. So what you want to do is score 3 or more. And by the way, scoring 4 or more, they're 63-17. So that's even better. If they get to that 4 to 6 runs a game, they'll be golden. But even if they get to 3, 68-24 when they score 3 or more.
Well, I still would like to see more than that considering the amount of offense in the league this year. I think if you're only scoring 3 runs a night, you're cutting it close.
Yeah,
let's
you're
put it
probably
that way.
Close to a 500 team.
Yeah.
It's the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN. Coming up, yesterday Jeff Passan said he thinks you can tell the story of this era of baseball without Yadier Molina. That might be fair, but who and what would be included if you told the story of this era of the game? That's next on 101 ESPN. That's ESPN's Jeff Passan here on 101 ESPN. And if we look at this era of being this decade, I think it'd be difficult to tell the story without Yadier Molina. Here's a team that he played on, that he was the common thread for, that went to the playoffs in 2011, won the World Series, 2012, went to the League Championship Series, 2013, went to the World Series, 2014, went to the League Championship Series, and 2015, went to the playoffs. If you are going to talk about this era of baseball, then I think you have to include Yadier Molina's name. Now, if we're putting together a 30 for 30 on the 2010s in baseball, Ron, here are the numbers, or the names I have, and I think they're obvious. Clayton Kershaw, obvious. Zach Greinke, Mike Trout, best player in the game. Albert Pujols signs the biggest contract, second biggest contract in baseball history, but the assault on the record books continues on this decade. Madison Bumgarner becomes one of the best postseason pitchers and maybe the best World Series pitcher ever. Buster Posey, a catcher for 3 world champions in the decade. Matt Cain, a starter, an impact starter for 3 world championship teams in the decade. John Lester, in large part because of what he did in 2004 and 2007, but then going to the Cubs and helping end their drought in 2016 as well. I would go with Lester, Chris Bryant, who became a Rookie of the Year and MVP. Big Poppy clearly has to be part of the story of baseball in this decade. Derek Jeter's retirement. Mariano Rivera was still good up until his retirement. Joe Maddon, not a player, but he ended the curse for the Cubs. The HDH, and that would be Herrera, Wade Davis, and Holland in Kansas City, the cornerstone really to back-to-back World Series teams. Clemens and Bonds not getting into the Hall of Fame. Miggy Cabrera winning a Triple Crown, first time since 1941 that a player had won the Triple Crown. And then you have Yadi, Justin Verlander, Giancarlo Stanton, who signed the biggest contract in baseball history at $313 million, Altuve, and then obviously Harper and Machado at the end of this year with their contracts as well. I think that, to me, and you can text in if there's a name that I've left out, that to me is the group of players, and it does include Yadi, that would be included in a documentary about baseball in this decade.
Well, see, here's why I don't like the argument from him. Can you tell the story without naming players? How much time do we have? I mean, are we doing this in a couple of minutes? If it's tell the story of the 2010s, and you have a minute and a half to 2 minutes to do it, yeah, no, maybe Yadier Molina doesn't have a place in that. But if you're if you have an hour, you know, I think it's really kind of a vague idea. But if we're talking really about the important players of the decade, and you named most of the good ones, I got a few other ones. Adrian Beltre, I don't think you can tell the story.
Yep.
You cannot tell the story of the last 10 years without him. You can't tell it without Josh Hamilton either. Even if he didn't affect the entire decade, that's somebody who had a story and supposed to be maybe the best prospect in baseball. Then he has substance issues. Then he makes a comeback and is a monster, an absolute beast while he is back out there. And then he falls victim to it again. I don't think you can tell the story without him. I don't think you could tell the story without Felix Hernandez either. Arguably one of the best pitchers mm-hmm. in baseball. Not arguably. He was one of the best pitchers in baseball for a several-year stretch, but never really got to show it in the postseason. And that's no fault of his own. It's because of the team he played on. Joey Votto, you can't tell the story of Major League Baseball in the last decade without Votto either. One of the most underrated players. I mean, we do talk about him, I think, a little bit more now, and he gets a little bit more love than he should, but he was victim to being on a team that didn't get a whole lot of attention. You could even throw Paul Goldschmidt into that. And that's really been over the last few years, I guess. But
this is a three-hour documentary now.
Yeah, but so that's what I'm saying. Like, how do you decide who you're eliminating here? I mean, is it 2 minutes? Is it 30 minutes? But these are some of the most important players of the last 10 years or so.
Generally, though, if you're going to do a story about baseball in the decade, you're going to have a lot of postseason highlights. And Yadier Molina is going to wind up in a lot of postseason highlights. And like I said, was the common thread, maybe not the centerpiece, but the common thread of a team that did go to the postseason five consecutive times. And by the way, out of that group that you mentioned, Hamilton's not going to any Hall of Fame. I think, obviously, Felix Hernandez does, Beltre does. But once again, when you're talking about Hall of Famers, I would throw Yadi in that group. And I again, respect where Passan is coming from because he doesn't respect Yadi's offensive numbers. But the amount of winning, the defense, the fact that teams don't run on him and haven't run on him for the decade, the fact that when you talk to baseball people, they have universal respect for the way that he manages a game, I would be inclined to put him on that list.
Well, there's a reason he is, as catchers go, one of the most well-known of the last 15 years or so. And it's and then there's a reason he's got that reputation. It's because there's something behind it. And I know sometimes it happens where your reputation of being good is maybe overblown. That can happen. I just don't think that's really what's happening here in his case. And something we haven't talked about when we've had this discussion over the last few days this week, and I hate to say it because I really like the guy, I just don't think Harold Baines belongs in the Hall of Fame. But because he's now in the Hall of Fame, the bar has been lowered a bit for other players. And that's a really shame. It's an absolute shame for Baines, because that's what people are going to say about him for a long time. Like, oh, well, Harold Baines is in, so so-and-so should be in now. But if it's kind of true, because he is in the Hall now, I think the standard is not quite as high, even though he was a really, really good player. I just don't know if he belonged in the Hall of Fame, but he has the right friends. He has the right people who like him enough who mm-hmm. can make that push, and that's exactly why he got in. So if that's the case, I don't see a case for leaving Yadier Molina out.
And if Tony La Russa is still on that veterans committee, if Yadi doesn't get put
that's
in
right.
by the writers, then Yadi will absolutely be in. But I hope that the writers are better than that, that they have paid attention to the sport since 2004.
Well, I do believe there are going to be a lot of people who look at his offensive numbers and have the same argument Passan has.
That's pretty irresponsible. If you're a baseball writer with one of those votes and you look only at players' offensive ability, that's really irresponsible when looking at the Hall of Fame.
Well, either way, I think if you're only looking at one aspect and that's how you decide, it's totally irresponsible.
Yep,
but if
is.
You're also only looking at the subjective and you're only looking at reputation and nothing else, I think that's irresponsible too. You got to take everything into account. And you could make an argument that he was one of, if not the best catcher in the National League for a stretch, he was one of the top two for several of the years that we're talking about over the last 15. So by virtue of that, I think he belongs in. And I believe that if he's in for another year, so he's got one more year on his contract. Do you think he's going to play after next year?
I do not.
You think next year will be it?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, so if next year is it, and for whatever reason he signs a one-year deal and says, I want to play one more year after this even, so he's got two more years left to go, this conversation will continue over the next year and a half or 2 years. And I think as people get used to the idea of voting for him, you're going to have more and more people who are in the association who get a vote are going to flip. Maybe they were hesitant about giving him their vote. I think that'll happen after a year or two time. When you have time to think about it. At least that's what I think. Maybe I'm being hopeful about it, but there's going to be some pushback. When he's eligible 5 years after he retires, maybe it takes a year or two to get in after that, but I think he gets in.
And by the way, we get a text about Yastrzemski winning the Hall of Fame. I'm talking about winning the Triple Crown. I'm talking about the outright Triple Crown because he has tied for the home run lead in 1967.
Right.
Williams won it outright. So that's where I'm going with that. Hey, next up in the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN, you can stop complaining about the Cardinals not playing Lane Thomas. We've got that and much more in your Hot Topics of the Day on 101 ESPN. Cards and Reds tonight at the ballpark. It's the opener of a four-game series, including a doubleheader tomorrow. And the Cardinals are going to pitch Dakota Hudson. He'll go against Trevor Bauer, the near-trade deadline acquisition for the Red Legs. The Cardinal lineup, Dexter Fowler, Colton Wong, Paul Goldschmidt, Ozuna, DeYoung, Molina. Marp is in there, along with Bader, and Hudson is your pitcher. The Cardinals did announce today they have placed outfielder Lane Thomas on the 10-day IL with a right wrist fracture, and outfielder Tyler O'Neill has been activated from the 10-day IL. Thomas suffered hit by pitches to his right arm in back-to-back games Monday and Tuesday, so he's going to go on the shelf. O'Neill, just coming off of a rehab stint in Memphis, where he went 6-for-22, hitting .273 with a homer on Tuesday against Frisco. So Thomas out, Tyler O'Neill is in.
And O'Neill is not in the lineup for tonight. In case you were wondering, we did go over it a little bit ago, but your outfield is going to be Bader in center, Marcell Ozuna in left, obviously, and Dexter in right. Matt Carpenter is playing at third base.
Yep.
Again, how do you feel about it?
Not great, although I did say yesterday that I thought he would start more than half of the Cardinals' remaining games.
I think it's gonna be about a third. But
hope so.
Look, if he goes 0-for-4 tonight, you can't start him again. You can't do it the very next time out. I'm sure they want to
reward him.
He'll play
a game tomorrow though in the doubleheader.
Well, he's gonna play in the doubleheader. Yeah, that's true. But on a regular basis, it has to, as the season comes to an end, be performance-based only. It can't be based on hope or track record or anything like that. It's got to be, what are you doing for me now, not what have you done for me in the past.
At Wrigley this afternoon, Nicholas Castellanos has a pair of two-run homers, at one in the first, one in the second. Chase Anderson was chased early by the Cubs. He went four innings, allowed all five runs. Chicago leads in the seventh by a score of 5-0.
And Castellanos did a bit of a two-handed bat slam after one of those home runs, and it doesn't look like the Brewers retaliated. As far as I can tell, I haven't been paying close attention to this game, but it doesn't look like they tried to put one in his ear.
And good job by Quintana starting for the Cubs today.
Yeah, so maybe we're getting to a point here in baseball where the pitchers aren't going to be red-ass all the time about...
Let the kids play.
Exactly. Let's let them have some fun.
But then the hitters have to not be upset when the pitcher does the shoot 'em up when they strike him out, or fist bumps and fist pumps
not.
And stuff like that.
I love it.
Yeah, it'd
be
fun.
I love all of it. Fist pumps and the finger guns and pointing to the sky, all of it.
Should be fun.
Crooked caps, whatever. I love it all.
A medical examiner in Texas has ruled the Angels pitcher Tyler Skaggs died from an accidental overdose of drugs and alcohol. The Tarrant County Medical Examiner's Office said in a report that Skaggs had the powerful painkillers fentanyl and OxyContin, along with alcohol, in his system. He was found dead in his hotel room, of course, on July 1st, before the start of what was supposed to be a series against the Rangers. Skaggs' family released a statement to the LA Times on Friday saying, "We are heartbroken to learn that the passing our beloved Tyler was the result of a combination of dangerous drugs and alcohol. That is completely out of character for someone who worked so hard to become a Major League Baseball player and had a very promising future in the game he loved so much. We are grateful for the work of the detectives in the South Lake Police Department and their ongoing investigation into the circumstances surrounding Tyler's death. We were shocked to learn that it may involve an employee of the Los Angeles Angels. We will not rest until we learn the truth about how Tyler came into possession of these narcotics, including who supplied them. To that end, we have hired attorney Rusty Harden to assist us." Harden was Roger Clemens' attorney in his perjury trial in 2012, and now he will assist the family of Tyler Skaggs as they try to get to the bottom of how he got those drugs that wound up killing him.
So a team employee might be involved here. That's going to be an absolute mess.
Yes.
When they, and I obviously they probably already know who it is, but which team employee, I'm curious to know who that would be too.
Well,
I don't know if it's the trainer.
Somebody
if it's
on the medical staff, right? That would be the logical assumption.
Sometimes the traveling secretary has a bunch of stuff.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I don't know why, but I don't know if that's true in every organization, but sometimes it is.
College football continues tonight. You've got Tulsa at 18th-ranked Michigan State. That game is going to be seen on FS1 tonight. Wisconsin will open their season at South Florida. And then tomorrow, of course, Mizzou will open up their season as they take on Wyoming in Wyoming at 6:30. And that game can be seen on the CBS Sports Network.
I got some foosball coming up this weekend, and it matters.
Yeah, looking forward to it.
I'm excited. I'm ready to go.
It's going to be great. Fifth-ranked Ohio State plays Florida Atlantic tomorrow. And you've got Nebraska, their second year under Scott Frost, opening up at home against South Alabama. Number two, Alabama will play Duke. You think Duke has a chance in that one?
They don't have Daniel Jones, do they?
No, they don't.
Okay, then no.
Sixth-ranked LSU plays Georgia Southern, and, of course, top-ranked Clemson was able to come away with a big victory last night over Georgia Tech, 52-14. We've got a full day for you tomorrow, by the way. Duke and Alabama will be heard here on 101 ESPN. Auburn and Oregon will be heard at 1:30 as well. And then you've got, those two games starting at 1:30, the doubleheader.
Big day of football.
You get both Alabama and Auburn. That'll be cool.
Randy, should we also let the people know there's a little bit of a change in our schedule?
Yeah, we can do that. We're going to be starting at 2 o'clock starting on Tuesday.
2 to 6.
Yeah.
Those are the new hours. So hopefully, well, here's what's going to have to happen for you. If you were one of those people that used to get out of work late, you're going to have to start leaving work early now.
And, hey, let's lay it out for you. It was announced this morning on the Bernie Show. Michelle is not going to be on the Bernie Show anymore. Michelle Smallman will oversee our digital product and she'll our digital and social media project. So Michelle Smallman will still be a huge part of our station. We hope to have a regular segment with Michelle here in the Fast Lane. Kevin Wheeler is no longer with the station, and we will have different programming between 10 and 2. And then we'll be on from 2 to 6, and most of our Blues games, all of our Blues games that start at home, night games, weeknight games, we'll have a 6 o'clock pregame. So we'll still be with you for 4 hours a day, and then the Blues will start at 7. But it'll be Bernie from 7 to 10. Freeze Pops and NPR Dave will be there as well. And then different programming from 10 to 2, and we'll have an announcement about that in the very, very near future, maybe even Tuesday. And then starting Tuesday, the Fast Lane from 2 to 6.
Yep. So we're going to lead you right into Blues hockey a lot of nights. That's going to be fun.
Yeah.
Right into the Blues pregame show. And then we're also going to have some extra Blues programming throughout the season.
We will.
I don't know exactly what's going to happen, but there's going to be a lot of new stuff for you Blues fans that are starving for more content, more shows. You're going to get them. We've got the Blues Caravan that's been going on here for the last few weeks already. That's going to continue through until the beginning of the season. I wish Wheeler well, though. I love that dude. Kevin Wheeler is...
He's a great guy. He's a great broadcaster. Yes. I've known him since he came to town, and I knew of him when he was at Sporting News Radio and knew of his great work, and he was one of the successors to all of the people, including myself, that have done Sports Open Line at KMOX. He's been here for 6 or 7 years, I believe 6 years.
Yeah.
And we will still obviously be in touch with him. And you're right, he's a great guy, and we always hate to see that happen. But that's not only this business, that's every business now, is that change is inevitable, and that's one of the changes that happened here.
And he's very good. He's very good at his job and what he does. Do you know how hard it is to do a 3-hour talk show every day and you don't take any phone calls and you don't have a co-host and you have a few guests every now and then, but you know, it's just you for 3 hours. That's difficult.
No. It's the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN, and those are your hot topics of the day. Coming up, we've got a new fighter coming your way in the 4 o'clock fight here on 101 ESPN.
Dunkin' cold coffee can be brewed at home in your Keurig coffee maker with Dunkin' cold K-Cup pods. Just brew it hot over ice and enjoy flavor that's crafted to serve cold. The home with Dunkin' is where you want to be.